Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you. And let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast.
Ready. Let's do it.
Let's do this.
Welcome back, everybody. I've got Sally Kilpatrick with me.
Hello, hello.
And we're going to be talking about episode 3 of season 5, The First Contact Job, which aired on August 5th, 2012. It was directed by our good friend, Jonathan Frakes. I say good friend. I don't know, man. But we can imagine that he is our good friend.
He's a good friend.
Yes. There we go. And it was written by the first writing credit on Leverage for Aaron Dennis Garcia, who was a writing assistant and when Rebecca Kirsch moved up to a writing position. And so he kind of took her little spot and then got his chance to pitch an episode and write an episode. And I think this was the last one that he did, which... I mean, it's the last season. Yeah. So he is part Venezuelan. So he's like one of our like few writers of color on this show. And he's also an actor. He has a cameo in this episode and we'll talk about it when we get to it.
Ooh, exciting.
I know. All right. So in this episode, the team, what do? They take down a wealthy scientist who has stolen a colleague's work and then made it look like he was crazy. So Nate and the crew decide that they're going to convince him that he's made contact with aliens.
As one does.
Like you do, yeah. Makes total sense. So we start off with our poor victim, whose name is Oren. That's actually the actor's name as well. They're okay. Just like, we'll just give him his own name. Who's an Israeli actor. And he, you know, gets off the elevator. He's heading toward the conference room. He's going to confront our bad guy, whose name is Kanik, which gets brought up a lot. So remember that name.
I was about to say, I was going to wait for you to pronounce it because reasons. We'll get there.
Right. James Kanik. Remember that name. And... you know, we get a lot of exposition from somebody who's like, I thought you got fired, blah, blah, blah. And he is pounding on a window as James Kanik is in a meeting with a bunch of other executives. I'm talking about this hybrid jet engine that he has created.
Mechanic hybrid. I'm like, why did I choose this episode again? I was soon reminded, but I was like, this is okay. Hybrid jet engine.
Yeah, I mean, all we need to know is that once the aircraft reaches cruising altitude, the Kanik hybrid and jet engine switches to fully hybrid mode. So that's really the only thing they talk about in regards to this, which I'm really happy about. It sounds really neat, but he also says, oh, and you know, then your price of flying goes down, but you don't have to lower your ticket prices.
Which,
and they're all like, oh, we're evil capitalists.
Yeah, exactly. It was very evil capitalist.
Oh, it was awful. And so Oren is like banging on the window and he's like, that is my work. He stole it. Don't listen to him. He's a liar. And he gets pulled away. And Kanik and his lawyer are like, he was like, he's just mentally unstable and he couldn't hack it working with Mr. Kanik. And then so he's like, so pay no attention to that man who they just pulled kicking and screaming away. Do you want you want to do a deal?
He stands up and he's all like, I think we've heard enough. And for like a half second, you're like, they're going to do the right thing and they're going to walk away. But no, evil capitalists. They're like, let's buy this at the price you said earlier.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Exactly. But first he says, we want to purchase the hybrid jet engines. And he's like,
hybrid jet.
And he's like, okay, sure, fine.
Whatever, dude.
Right? The guy who's playing his lawyer, Kip Brighton, is played by Sean O'Brien, who, what else was he in? I'm looking him up because I'm like, who knew this man?
I think he played a character named Kip on Futurama, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes. I knew that there was like that connection, but I didn't realize that he was the guy who was the voice of him. That's great.
I think so. I mean, I think I read that earlier today. It's 2020. I swear to nothing.
I'm looking it up.
Okay.
He's one of those guys who's been in a lot of things. He's in an episode of Bones. He's in two episodes of Dexter, Ghost Whisperer, Lie to Me, Flash Forward, Family Man, Cold Case, Private Practice. I swear he was on a show. He was in 6 Feet Under.
If it involves death, he's there. Is that what I'm getting
from apparently, this? Crossing okay. Jordan. Oh, he's Mia's stepdad. He's the teacher who then marries her mom in Princess Diaries, Mr. O'Connell.
Oh.
Yes.
Got it.
He was also on Felicity. He was on JAG. I love looking at IMDb things. He was on Roswell. Okay. He was not in Futurama, it looks like.
Okay.
I think he was named for someone. He was in Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Wow.
I loved that show. He was in Touched by an Angel. A lot of people on the show have been in Touched by an Angel.
I mean, Touched by an Angel was on for so long, I think everybody was in it.
It's true. It's very much like British television, where like it just recycles all actors, but the opposite way. He was in The Pretender. He was on several episodes of Murder, She Wrote.
Oh, that's
limited. He must have been a baby. Picket Fences, Beverly Hills 90210, Heart and Souls. Wait, the movie? He was in an episode of Northern Exposure. And wow. His first name was in MacGyver in 1991. Also, The Legend of Prince Valiant, the TV series.
Speaking of things I've forgotten.
I didn't know there was a TV series. He's been in a lot of stuff is all I wanted to say.
2 hours later.
2 hours, yes. I know, it's very much
the 2 hours later.
Yeah, it's very much SpongeBob meme. 2 hours later, we're in the leverage or in the brew pub, and Oren is talking to Nate and Sophie about how he, Kanik, offered to fund his research and that they would have said that they would share credit if it worked out. And he's like, well, yeah, sure, it was a gamble, but I just have ideas on a page. He has the money, and that's how you build prototypes. So, you know, he says, he took all of their results and published them under his own name. Mm-hmm. And to make sure he couldn't fight it, Kanik ruined his reputation. So he like framed a medical incident that happened to him as a suicide attempt
So he says he, when he got fired, he was depressed. So his psychiatrist prescribed him antidepressants, but he was also
on migraine meds.
And that caused, I meant to look this up, but like serotonin syndrome sounds terrifying.
Yes.
You'd think it would just make you really happy.
No.
You have a lot of serotonin, but apparently it does not.
Yeah.
In fact, it causes confusion and hallucinations. So he ended up in the hospital, but it wasn't because he tried to end his own life. But of course, Kanick has the ability to alter medical files somehow because he's very rich and very evil. And now no one will even hire Oren. So even if he was like, fine, you can take my designs, I don't care, he can't go somewhere else and do anything else because nobody will hire him. And he wants to go to court because he has these copyright, like watermarks, right? Digital
watermarks, yeah.
On his work. So if a judge saw them, they'd be admissible.
He can't take Kanick to court because Kanick's like, this is a trade secret.
Yeah.
But anyway, digital watermarks, that was a thing, that was a deal.
Yeah. But later we find out.
It was not a deal. It was also not a thing, but anyway.
So it's a good thing he did go to Nate, because that wouldn't have worked. So, and Nate's like, okay, so we're going to get your files back and then we'll destroy the guy. Cool, cool. Case closed. See you later. And he's finger like, guns, walks out. Yeah, Sophie's like, Oren's like, oh, did you not listen to me? And what I said was the problem.
Yep. And that is one of the themes of this episode, listening.
Yes. But there's also a theory about this listening thing here. We talk about that a little bit. So inside headquarters, Elliot's mean and he says, where's, and he does like a crazy whirly finger and like a typey thing to be like, where are Hardison and Parker? And Nate's like, I sent them on ahead. So Sophie does the explanation of the job, which we learn that James Kanick is the owner of Kanick Worldwide, inventor of the Kanick irrigation process, the Kanick self-drying washing machine, and the Kanick low-flow toilet. And so apparently this is a guy who cares more about fame than respect because he's willing to name a toilet after himself. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's...
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd be fine without having the toilet named after me.
I'd be cool. I mean, I think advances in toilet technology are very important.
Oh, yes, yes.
But I don't want people to think of me every time they go to the bathroom.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Just not what I want. It's fine. It's fine. Like, I already think about those stupid bears from a commercial. I don't want to think about a specific person.
Like, 2020 has traumatized you now. Those Charmin bears, they're taunting really you. Helps. You're like, you really can't have any TP. It's all gone.
But we find out his history. I guess he has always felt like in the shadow of his dad, who was an actual genius. Right?
Yes.
His dad. It was his dad. It was like, it wasn't his grandfather.
But he dropped out of college when his dad died because he inherited $20 million. So then he started.
But we never know why, like what his real genius was.
The dad?
Yeah.
It obviously wasn't procreating.
Or raising a child.
Or raising a child, no.
Because, I mean, he did a good job having one, but, or, you know, making one happen. So he decides that didn't finish this engineering degree, but I've got all this money. I'm going to hire young geniuses and steal their work and then lawyer myself up so that I get to keep all the credit. And Elliot's like, over a toilet. Seriously. So, but now he's apparently setting his sights higher with, because Braddock Aeronautics is a lot more important than the toilet. And they're going to be back in 3 days to finish this deal and they're going to pay Kanick. So they have like this little window of time where they can get in and screw everything up and get the money back and get the plans and ruin them. And he says, luckily for us, we're going to have the research back in 2 hours, right, Hardison? But Hardison's not listening. because Artisan and Parker are debating something. And they're so adorable this whole episode.
Oh, yeah. Is that where they started with the date thing and the bungee jumping? And
yeah.
And then Hardison, he's like, hopefully less than. I don't want to waste the rest of this day. And
yeah, he's like, she says he wants to get back to his online orc battle.
Oh, yeah. Orc battle.
And then they have a little, they place a little bet to see who can get into the server room faster. She wants to go through the vents, and he's like grossed out by
dust mites. He had a whole Hardison thing about dust mites.
He hates dust.
Mendibles.
He hates dust. Remember when he had to go in the archives in the Van Gogh job and his allergies got all messed up? The boy hates dust. The man hates dust. And I mean, that makes sense. If you work around computers, you don't really want dust in things. So she's like, okay, but I can get there faster. But he's like, but I have this magical toy called Marvin who can ping you into any electronics within a 200-yard radius, you know, so turn things on and off, get you in and out. And she's like, yeah, but can it change the channel? So here's our first, I think, unless Braddock is another reference, but this is our first really geeky reference because someone asked if it was referring to Marvin the Martian, or if it was referring to Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the paranoid android. And I think that it's Marvin the Martian.
I've seen a couple
because
it's a gizmo for one thing, but yeah, I saw Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, I think that fits better.
Of course, the answer may be yes.
I think that's basically what John said in the vlog. He was like, yeah.
Absolutely, that's what I would do. I'd be like, I totally meant to do that.
It's a twofold reference. So they decide that whoever can get to the server room first gets to choose their next date, and then she's like, okay, go. It's so cute. So Hardison lets him, we only see from his point of view, he lets himself in with the controller to scramble the monitors at the security station, and then he just like saunters in. And even like takes his hood down, doesn't care.
Oh, wait. And then goes running.
Yeah, he's like, wait, I can't be cool. I gotta hurry. And uses his controller to open the doors, you know, all the way. And then he gets to the server room, but it's just got a standard lock.
Key lock.
And he's like, this is what beat me. Which this is the second episode in a row where he's been like, I'm not gonna pick this key lock. Come on. Because he did it in the blue line job last time. But Parker opens the door because she got there before him. She's like, hello.
He's like, man. She's immediately like bungee jumping.
Yeah. And he's like, no, we've already done that. And she's like, not if a hot air balloon. And then we find out that they've definitely been doing these bets pretty regularly because he says, I seriously need to win one of these bets, which might account for like the montage in the first episode of the season where it's just them ziplining down things in beautiful places. And Parker's like, all right, Earth to date, do you see us? And they're start downloading the files in the server room and they're being told like, hurry up. You know, Nate says there's people coming, security guards. And Hardison's like, I'm trying. Some of these files are huge, which we're like, oh, I wonder why they're so big. Bitch, because they're jet engine plans, right? So they don't have time to leave by the door because here comes the security guard. So they end up in the air vents.
Anyway.
And in a very... very sweet little,
yes,
comfortable, cozy,
romantic. Yes. I started to say compromising, but it's not really compromising.
No, not when you're in a relationship.
It's just romantic.
Yeah. Yes,
it's this a close definitely encounter. It's a close encounters of the ventilation kind. Yes,
yes, yes. If I gave these episodes my own titles, that's what this one would be. And she's like, see, vents are better. And he's like, yeah, it's not that bad. And then she ruins the mood. by saying you're totally surrounded by like a million of those dust mite things and you can't even feel them. And he's like, no, I can't. Let's get out of here. She's like, oh, but I love this because then she's aware that she has killed the mood. She's like, oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Which yeah. I think is wonderful.
Sweet.
Yeah. This next scene, they're back at Leverage headquarters and Hardison, in a very 2020 move, is just hand sanitizing his, yeah, his entire arms.
Clean again.
Yeah. And Sophie's like, is that your second bottle? And it's one of those huge ones you can't get anymore because they're all sold out. In the commentary, Aldous Hodge was in the commentary this time, and they were like, John Rogers told him, he's like, yeah, originally we were just going to have you in a towel, like with the hand sanitizer. We were going to like, it was going to be a treat for the whole world, but it didn't work with something else. So we all missed that. Sorry, everybody. Hardison finds that Kanik hunted out every piece of code that the client put in there as his digital watermark and took them all out. So they've got nothing to prove that they were his first. But they've also found some audio recordings that are just of static, like hundreds of hours, which is probably why it took so long to download. And Nate tells them to play him and then it comes on and it's just static. And Sophie's like, just sounds like one of your mixes. And Parker starts like nodding along with the beat. She's so supportive. She's like, I like it. Play the next one. And then Elliot comes in and he's like angry because Hardison has bought iodized salt when he asked for sea salt.
Yes.
Which reminds me of we sent my dad to the grocery store one time and we asked him to pick up feta cheese.
Yes.
And he like couldn't find it anywhere. I mean, he was in like a small HEB in a small town in Texas, but he finally had to ask an employee for help. And he came back and he's like, I got your feta. And we went inside and he had bought us a box of Velveeta. I don't know if iodized to sea salt is quite that egregious, but.
Well, to Elliot, it is. Which is a nice nod to him being a cook, which I'm sure they did because of the next episode, but.
Yeah. We're just laying all that groundwork. But then he's like, who got the military satellite in this up?
Oh, is that what it is?
And he's like, you're not supposed to. And they all, Sophie just looks at him and he's like, it's a very distinctive static. And Hardison's like, okay, so he's listening in on military satellites. But he says, no, he must have gotten these by accident. And they pull up the display of the server room and Nate is like, he's listening for something else. I don't know what. And then he's like, there's a close-up image of space in the monitor in the server room, I guess. And he's like, for someone else. And Parker's like, what?
Yep.
This is better than Santa. This is better than Area 51. And she really like does, like she gets excited and she looks at Elliot again because he's very much on telling her fake conspiracy theories.
It's the first part of my favorite running gag of this episode.
Yes.
Where she's like, Elliot, he's not here for it. He's not having it.
So we realized that, Sophie's like, this man wants to put his name on every invention. He wants fame more than anything else. And what's going to make him the most famous scientist ever? Being the person to prove that we're not alone. And then she does the Elliot. Which I was, two things about this. I was like doing the math. And if Christian Kane and Elliot are the same age, then he was about 10 when E.T. came out. So you know he got that on the playground all the time.
All the time.
So it's not just that like Parker's being annoying. It is that like this is bringing back annoyances from childhood. Yes. And he probably like learned to fight to stop kids from doing that.
Oh my gosh, they should have done a flashback. This is how Elliot became a hitter. Some kid going, Elliot.
And he's like, knock him out. One punch. Oh my gosh. Yes. Well, that's my new headcanon. And the second is that the other two E.T. references that Parker makes were written before this one. And it wasn't until they were like getting ready to film that Aaron Garcia was like, oh my gosh, I could do that one. Yeah. But can you imagine that on set? Like, say Elliot.
Oh, I would. That would be me. With the histrionic realization.
Mm-hmm. I love it. So they decide. Ellie does threaten to snap off her hand when she does this, by the way. So Nate has changed tacks and he says, since we can't prove Kanick stole the research, we're going to appeal to his hunger for fame. And, it's the only way we can do it. And so then we can get Oren his money. And so he's like, it's not about the money. And he doesn't listen to her.
No.
So Hardison's like, so you want to send him a message from space?
Yeah.
And Parker's just like, well, how's that going to get us money? I don't understand that. And Nate says, by convincing him that he's only listening to half a message. Uh-huh. And then he says, let's go steal a close encounter. So there's another reference.
Another space one.
Mm-hmm. Then we have this wonderful, wonderful scene where they're going out to get ready to send out this message and they pull up in the van, in Lucille, in this field.
Yes.
And they are mid-conversation talking about how alien probably don't exist. And Hardison brings up Fermi's paradox. It says it's improbable for other life forms to exist. And Elliot, just like in the last episode with Parker with her like Cold War techniques, he's like, well, Drake's equation.
This is the greatest thing ever right here.
It is so good.
Men being very geeky. This is very nice. Carry on, gentlemen.
I know, right? It's like, you could do this all day and I would be very happy. And he, of course, follows it up with, you never know when you might have to fight an alien. So, like, I need to be prepared.
Clearly.
And instead of Hardison, like, making fun of him, he's just like, all right. I mean, fair.
Fair is fair. I mean, we've got things to do here. I don't have time to argue that point.
Yeah. Here, like, and he's
looking like, heavy backpack. Exactly.
And well, and Hardison's probably also like, if aliens do come and they want to throw down, I want you ready.
Yeah, for real.
So they are really high up, apparently, where there's stronger sky clarity and there's, all these other things. And he's like, shut up, Hardison. I don't actually care. Even though I asked, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And he's putting on his like proton pack because they wanted it to like be reminiscent of a Ghostbusters proton pack. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what did you put in here? It's like 200 pounds. So, but it needs to be strong enough to bounce the signal off something that'll make it seem like it came from deep space. And Elliot's like, yeah, I know how satellites work. And he's like, yeah, this isn't just any satellite. We're going to use the original satellite, which they did for real with this Project Diana in 1946, which is a real thing. So they're using the moon, everybody's girlfriend, the moon, in the daylight. And he's like, it's daylight. He just doesn't care.
poor Hardison. He's like, the moon.
just realize how great the moon. Okay, fine. Just go start walking. I'll tell you where to go. And he's like, the sun's up. So he's walking around in this field and Nate's like, all right, you made sure that the message seems realistic, right? And then he's also telling, Hardison or Elliot, like, go left, now go right, get us, bounce it off this precise thing. And, if they bounce it off the precise angle of the moon, can they ensure that Kanick is the only one who won't get the message? Because can you imagine if like a bunch of people got this message?
That would be
bad news bears. And Elliot's like, what, who listens to aliens anyway? And he's like, everybody, SETI, they listen, they blog, yeah. They like, and then he's like, okay, wait, you got it.
Right there, stop.
Yeah. But then he's like, are we done? It's like, oh, yeah,
almost. We need it. And then almost, now two steps forward. and two steps back. He's so already sitting. He's just having fun with Elliot. He's
making him square dance.
Yes.
Or line dance.
And then Elliot realizes that glorious moment when he realizes, and then the dot starts moving. The Elliot dot is like running toward the Lucille dot, which I was like, I'm so glad there's a Lucille dot, but
not a Hardison dot, a Lucille dot. Yeah. She's important. She's a classic. Yeah. Also, he's moving that fast carrying this pack that's 200 pounds. Yeah. And he's like shaking the van, which they actually had like four guys shake it when it's moving. But Elliot could have shaken it on his own. Totally. Obviously. And back at headquarters, you know, Nate's like, okay, his server should get the signal any time now. And Sophie asks, like, why would anyone dedicate so much time to listening to nothing? And Nate says, for the hope of what they might hear. And then she's like, I just find it ironic that you're taking on someone who listens. And he's like,
Have you taken on someone who listens, Nate? Hello.
Yeah. So Kanik has been listening and he realizes that he hears something and he prints out a thing and he circles this line and he writes, and this is something that came up in a bunch of the blog and the other things. He writes, whoa, which is like a reference to this wow signal that he says from back in 1977, where they found something and they circled it and wrote, wow.
Wow.
And that has stayed with us. But he writes, whoa, but he spells it in a way that I do not spell whoa.
I dare I say that is the incorrect way to say to spell whoa.
Thank you. I think whoa has W-H.
Absolutely. It's W-H-O-A.
Maybe you're saying, whoa. If you make the H sound at the end.
That is too much work.
No, I don't. I'm excited. I'm not going to keep going with this word. I'm going to be like, whoa, and move on.
Oh my gosh. He's so excited. We're in the part where Kanik hears it, right? Because there's this one line in there, and hopefully I'm not going out of order, that got me so cracked up. And he just goes, it's called first contact for a reason, Kevin. And I'm like, that would be me if it were today. It's called first contact for a reason, Kevin.
Gosh. Ugh, it's like a teenager who's like, mom, you just don't understand. Nobody knows who the second guy who makes contact is. And then he notices that someone else who's close to his antenna has gotten the signal too. And so he has to like find this guy and track him down. And he's like, Kip, dismiss the employees. I want security only here while I verify this. So he's like sent everybody home.
Because
hopefully on a paid day off.
They didn't come now. You know they didn't.
They're like, oh, there's been a gas leak. Please leave. You're not getting paid.
Like that.
Yeah. So they've locked down the whole building so that they can dedicate every moment and every asset to this. And they, Parker has put a tracking device on their SUV as they leave. And they go, wait, where are we?
That's where she puts the driving device, and then she's like, we have liftoff. See what I did there?
Get it? And there's another space reference. So good. And Nate's like, yes, Parker, I get the space reference. I understand. So, you know, he tells Elliot and Hardison, heads up, Kanik is sending the muscle to the location, so you have to beat them there. But of course they're in Lucille, and so they're not going to win any races in Lucille.
Except
Hardison and Marvin have been working together. And they
lights to green.
Yes. And then we have one of the best scenes in all of Leverage.
Oh yes.
That everybody's been waiting for.
He chases
when he plays, he turns on the radio and plays his mix, which is this chase music that he has made up that he mixed himself. And then he starts singing. Good old boys behind the wheel, chasing down bad guys in Lucille. And Elliot is annoyed at first,
And then he starts singing along.
Then he gets into it and they're like just vibing as they go through these green lights. But then, like he always does, Elliot's like, oh wait, no, I cannot show that I'm having a good time. And then he like glares at him again at the end. And you're just like, just give it up, dude. It's like the Queen's Gambit job where he like hugs Artisan and he's like, what are you doing, man? And Artisan's like, you hugged me. But that scene originally, that little bit, the writer Aaron Garcia wrote that just for Hardison to do. And Aldous and Christian were like, hey, at this point, we're friends. Like our characters are really close. Like they would have something that they goofed off around and like ended. So they kind of extended that scene a little so they would sing together. And Aldous Hodge was like, yeah, because Christian can sing and I can't. Yeah. Please stop telling people I can sing. Like when he had to hum in that one in the Queen's Gambit job, and he's like, I'm so bad, I hate it. So cute. This man who's like, yes, you would lock me in a coffin, it's fine. I don't want to hum on television. Don't make me do it.
Sure, throw me in a pool while handcuffed to an office chair, but
yeah. But don't, God, don't make me sing again. And they managed to beat him there. Meet them there, and they're in a trailer, and we see somebody get pulled out of the trailer with a hood on and thrown into a van. And Hardison's watching with binoculars from far away, but totally misses an actual man in black standing in the bushes watching as well.
That was a very nice touch, yes.
Right? That is never explained and just like leaves it open. There. And some people asked on the blog and they were like, I don't know. But that's the cameo. So that is actually the writer, Aaron Dennis Garcia, which I think is cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And I just love the idea that you know, they came out, they were like, oh, we heard there's this alien signal that's come out. And then they kind of looked into it a little more and they were like, oh no, this is not. This is okay. Not. And they just go back to doing their own shady stuff and just leave it. Oh no, I just came up with a little headcanon about this.
Uh-oh.
Because Taggart and McSweeten are so high up.
Oh,
they're like, okay, we've had these photos, and they're like, oh no, we know them, it's fine, they're probably deep undercover,
yeah,
because they saw Parker with a badge.
Yes,
that's what it is, and that's why they were called off, because Taggart and the Sweetener are like, they're cool guys, don't worry about it. Okay, good. Oh, that's, my brain feels happy.
And my brain was happy with the next scene. I laughed so hard.
Yes. Okay.
They take off the hood.
They take off the hood. And
Elliot is gone full blown. Dude, you interview after a tornado. He's all, I mean, talk about two good old boys. He's all, hey man, they're coming for us. They're going to want to breed with us and make the super babies. I was like, oh my gosh.
And he's got the crazy eyes turned way up.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And then and Elliot, I love the choices you're making with this character.
Oh. And it's like, seriously? And she's like, I'm just trying to get some practice. I mean, if I'm going to run a theater and direct, I need to get better at this. I've got to focus on character development. And then Elliot is like, just on this tangent where he's trying to tell Kanick about being passed out in a sleeping bag in Eli, Nevada. And he and his buddy Lenny. Oh my God. So he mentions his buddy Lenny several times. And Lenny is actually a real person who was a friend of Christian Kane's and was actually the bassist for Toby Keith. And he would do these impressions of him and tell stories about him, and he sounds like hilarious. But I looked him up because in the blog, John Rogers was like, yeah, and as soon as he figures out that you can make a lot of money being funny, he's gonna switch to that and then we'll all know him. And so I looked him up And he passed away the next February.
No.
In a car accident. It's like, oh God.
I feel like I need to pour one out for Lenny, and I don't.
I know. I feel like Lenny would appreciate that. I finished my hot toddy. Oh no, I have another shot.
For Lenny.
There we go. Poor Lenny. So a lot of his character choices here are based on Lenny. So that's the tribute to Lenny.
All right. We hadn't even gotten to Elliot's actual name or his character's name.
Yes. So his actual name was just going to be like a place filler in the script until they chose a new one. But then Jonathan Frakes saw it in the script and was like, well, obviously, if you're going to name a character Willie Riker, we're keeping it in.
For real. And then I'm like, wait, Jonathan Frakes directed this? What?
Yeah. They said also in the blog that, because somebody asked, they're like, did you do this on purpose? And they said, you know, we have to work with the director's schedules, but also we will, and that's a part of the reason why this episode was where it was, because then they also try to match up an episode with the director who would do it the best justice. And that obviously for a one about space and aliens is going to be Jonathan Frakes. So they, you know, made sure he was able to do it.
And Willie Riker, yes.
So good.
I'm amused.
And Aaron Garcia has said he's actually never watched Star Trek.
Oh, gosh.
I know, right? So Kanik tells Willie that he wants to work with him since they're both up to the same thing. So they should pool their resources and work together. And he's going to let him use all of his state-of-the-art equipment. And then we can make the announcement to the world together, which we know that's not really
what he's doing. We know that's not happening.
Yeah. So he's like, do we have a deal? And he's like, oh yeah. And then he says, can I get an orange soda?
I know.
So good. Like, so good.
So cute.
And then Parker and Hardison are up and they come into the lobby and they're still talking about, or like haggling over, negotiating over what their date's going to be. And she's like, cave jumping.
It's always the jumping. That's just.
Yeah. And she's like, world's deepest caves are in Potosi, Mexico. And he's like, you're not listening to me about the whole jumping thing. I don't want to jump into things or jump off of things. I just don't want to jump. And she's like, I am. I'm listening. You're unhappy with the jumps that we're doing. I'm trying to choose different ones. I'm going higher so they can be better. They're so sweet. And all of this while they're like showing their badges to the people at the reception desk and they're dressed like Men in Black. And they walk up and she says, James Kanak, which is the first mispronunciation. And he's like, it's Kanak. So they're like, this is where someone was like, are these from this episode of Star Trek? Because she's Agent Fix and he's Agent Kelsey. And John Rogers is like, no. Also because now we know Aaron Garcia has never watched an episode. So
there
really
you
probably not. And they tell him that they've also gotten these signals from two federal satellites outside of Wyoming, and that it looks like you own three radio telescopes with multifunction phased array radars, and they want to make sure that he hasn't also received any signals that could be a breach of national security.
I'm really glad you said that part.
Yeah, I'm really glad that when leverage.whendarknessfalls.net exists with the full transcripts of the episode. So that's my shout out to them this week. I could not do this without you. And he's like, and what agency do you work for? And they're like, we didn't tell you. We're not going to. And so he's like, this is my head of legal and you guys need a warrant to look for data, don't you? And they're like, all right, so fine, we'll do that. And they leave. And Brian's like, why pick a fight with the government? I'm sure they know about Willie Riker.
And then he
goes on his evil speech of evil. So he names a bunch of things. He's like, Alfred Wallace created the theory of evolution years before Darwin, but it's Darwin's theory. Nikola Tesla invents at alternating currents, but all the power companies are named after Edison. So why are they the famous ones? And Tesla and
get your name on it.
Exactly. Because history is written by the winners. You get your name on it first, get it out there, and then all that. So he's like, so I'm going to do this. It's going to be James Koenig made first contact. Willie Riker isn't even going to rate a footnote. Which is so true, so real, so horrible.
Except for the fact that Willie Riker is actually a much bigger character than James Koenig.
True. So Nate puts into motion the next part where he puts in this clean file that Hardison has sent. And Koenig comes up and he's like, okay, yeah, I cleaned up all the audio, you know, techno jumbo, mumbo jumbo here.
I was distracted. And there was a Star Trek figurine behind him. That's what I was looking at.
So Elliot says, you know, I've got this message. It's pretty clean now, but you're going to need somebody who can decipher it. And we've got to get somebody in here.
An analyst.
Yeah. And he's like, why can't you do it? And he's like, I'm just a signals guy. You need a code breaker. But he's like, but don't worry. I know the perfect person to help you. She's a professor I met on the web, a crypto analyst. And her name's Dr. Pearl O'Neill, which is another reference to Dr. Daniel O'Neill from Stargate. And she even, in a little bit, talks about Mayan
calendars. Yes.
Yeah. And which is another Stargate reference, which is very topical to leverage because Dean Devlin worked on Stargate, directed Stargate.
Well, the last episode we did together, there was a Stargate artifact.
That's right. That's right. In the vault that he saved from the dumpster. I love Stargate. Okay. Yeah. And then Koenig is like, all right, well, I want you to get her in here. Get her in here, knucklehead.
He's like,
you and Elliot's like, you're so damn rude about it. I love that he calls him a knucklehead. It just reminds me of Legally Blonde, where she calls him like a butthead or something. And he's like, I haven't been called a butthead since the third grade. She's like, well, not to your face, maybe. So they're looking over, Bryden and Koenig, so his lawyer and him, are looking over a file and they're talking about Sophie's credentials, like, oh, she has a PhD from Cambridge and Brown and blah, blah, blah. So, but Bryden wants to do a little more background research on her, but he's like, Sophie's listening to something in the earbuds. She's like, shh, 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 like, be quiet. Stop talking about me. I'm listening to fake aliens. And she, you know, says, you know, all these different things. She's like, there's a pattern. There's three peaks. And it's every number, every other number of the first 20 digits of pi. She's like, okay.
He's like, does that mean something? And I'm like,
yeah.
Pi was the first thing she thought of. I think that's what that means.
Right.
So it's a mathematical pattern. And I'm like, again, I'm out.
Sure. I'll just believe you.
I'd believe
that's
it.
The thing. I would have bought into this. I'd been like, let's go. All right.
Especially whoever, the part where she was so convincing with the, whoever sent you this message wants you to answer. Yes. Or send the missing numbers back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Send the missing numbers back.
I'm like, yeah. Oh. And then she's like, who sent it to you? And he makes up a thing about it was a friend of his from Paris who sent it. They like play a game. You know,
a scientist. We should...
Yeah. It's just a nerdy thing scientists do. You understand cryptoanalysis, analyst lady. And then he tries to give her a check and she's like, oh, no, I shouldn't. He's like, consider it a consulting fee. And so she does take it.
Along
for
with
her discretion.
And
yeah, probably a non-disclosure agreement as well.
Yeah, probably.
So Koenig goes back in to Elliot and tells him he's right. The professor cracked the code and we're going to send these numbers back to them. And he's like, "Send? It's a message. Like, you can't send something back. Unless you have something you can send it with." And he's like, what are you talking about? What about my parabolic satellite antenna? And he's like, it's not going to work. You need, and then he goes into the exact thing that Hardison didn't tell me.
the higher you go in the clarity and hearts and they flash heart. He's like, I taught him that.
Yeah. And I do love that, you know, this is season 5. So every season, and this is a thing in this season, where we see people using the skills that they've been taught by the rest of the team and using them well. And it's just wonderful, the growth from Elliot, learning Photoshop in season 1 and like not being able to plug things in, like the USB drive, because they're cassette tapes, and like just working, and he could do the touch screen and now he can spout techno babble, and it's great. And Kenneth's like, okay, just tell me, what do I need? Like, I can get it. And so he tells him that we need a geostationary satellite. And he's like, you got one of those? I don't have one of those. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to get one of those then. I'm very rich. I can do that. And the lawyer's like, I just want to remind you that we, like, launching a satellite into orbit is, like, really expensive.
You know, those guys who wanted the Canic hybrid engine thing with a deal, they're coming back. I don't remember if it was tomorrow, but soon.
Very soon. So maybe we should. Yeah. And he's like, I don't care. I'm telling you to get me a satellite dealer within an hour. You go. And then he leaves. And Elliot's like, you're going to get fired, man. And then Canic tells him to shut up. Because Canic is mean. He's
He gets meaner as the episode wears on. I think that's on purpose, so we don't feel bad for him later. But anyway.
That's true, because what they do to him is something that makes you want to feel sympathetic. Mm-hmm. And they do, they have to like dial up the douche on this guy. So Nate's like, all right, there's only one place in Portland where he's going to be able to get what he needs. And it's this one communications, Annandale Communications. So they look up their broker, and he's like this pretty nice guy. He's allergic to shellfish.
Shellfish, I know. Okay.
All right. Hardison does not, you know, skimp on the knowledge that he shares.
No.
So they intercept his phone line when Canet calls, and Parker pretends to be his receptionist.
He's not coming back. No.
For the next information week. And he's like, that's personal. I'm not going to tell you. And he's like, I want to stress the urgency of my meeting with him. His last two mortgage payments have defaulted, and I'm just trying to help him save his house. Which is like, what? Did he just say that to try to con them, or did he do something to default his payments?
And we never really came back to that, did we? Because I that made me go, what?
Yeah. But
then Parker called him Karnak, and I was amused again.
Oh, so good. And then we see Nate in the office building that we're guessing is where Annandale is. And he's chatting with somebody as he goes up the escalator, because they've given him the right directions. And as Bryden and Canic approach, and they're like double checking this picture of him on the phone. But they said they were going to meet him in his office. But then they're like ambushing him. That
section got a little hazy. There were things going on behind me. Some dishwasher action. In and out the doors. And then I'm not sure that section was very clear in the first place.
They did say that there was more there that got edited for time.
Yes, that's what it felt like. It felt like it was down to the very bare bones. So if you missed it, then
you're just like, sure.
Yeah.
Just gotta let it go.
Roll with it. And at this point, I will always roll with it. So
always. They were sad about that though, because there was a lot of interesting stuff there where the launching satellite business is very much like high-powered real estate brokerage. And they had done a lot of research on that, and so they were kind of sad to let it go. But they tried to get everything condensed here for us. And we see Nate on, like, a big old Bluetooth. And he's, you know, talking on it like he's trying to make deals. And tell that boss of yours I don't launch private GPS Sputniks for less than 150. That's firm. As this girl walks away from him and is like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But I mean, he's giving it right back to Kanik. First of all, he calls him Kojak, which I was like, awesome. But he goes through this whole spiel about how it would take 2 years to launch a satellite. This is not something you can do in a hurry. That part I figured was true. And then it's like, you can borrow the satellite. I'm like, wait, what? You can borrow a satellite?
I feel like I've heard that before, where you can like borrow their signal for a little bit. Or like buy time on it. Like, and I imagine it would be like buying advertising space on a radio show.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently the going rate, if I'm remembering correctly, was 500 hours for $1 million. But I really feel like I ought to have my pinky up. $1 million.
Right. Yes. But he's, yeah. So he wants to do something under the table with him to do that, right?
Yes. Here's my offshore account. I'm like, we're just passing that out these days. Okay.
Just right here in front of the escalators.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But this guy's desperate at this point. He knows the mark. He knows his mark because he's like, Kip, make the transfer. And Kip's looking at him like, you have lost your marbles.
Yeah. And he's like, just send it over and over and over again. I don't care. All right. Bye. And then he just goes. And then we're back at the brew pub and it's like, all right, we didn't get your files back, but here's money. Bye.
And Mads is like, that's not what I wanted at all.
What? He's like, I'm sorry. I don't. He's like, oh, it's not about the money. It's never about the money. No, you want your reputation back. And he's like, yeah, whatever. I appreciate the help. Thanks for trying. And then he's just tries to leave.
Yep. And that's just Nate looking at Sophie, you knew? And she looks at him. She's like, I listened.
Yeah. This is another instance of, you know, Sophie saying, you're not listening. I was listening. And John Rogers says several times, he's like, is Nate not listening or is he testing Sophie?
I think he's not listening.
I mean, I think both theories have merit. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, going with the rest of the season, it could really be either one. Mm, but going with like the kind of arc that they are trying to do for him and like his relationship with Sophie, hopefully he is listening a little better. Maybe. So I do love this exchange between Hardison and Parker where they're like, he knows there's no return policy, right? I mean, he's supposed to keep this pile of money. And Parker says, here, I'll take the check and plant it in his wallet. And that's so sweet. Just like, because, you know, and a year ago, Parker would have been like, I'll keep it.
And then Hardison's like, no, I'll just wire it into his account right now.
Yeah. You don't even have to do that. So Nate's like, okay, well, we need to fix this. And we're going to give our client back his reputation. And Parker says, well, how are we going to do that? And Nate says, we're going to make Kanik insane.
Okay.
And the artist is like, he's back. And Sophie says the Arkham Ascent, which I immediately thought Batman, Arkham Asylum, right?
Insane. Yes, that was my first thought.
It's apparently also an H.P. Lovecraft reference, but obviously Batman's way better than H.P. Lovecraft. So we're going to go with Batman.
That was my thought.
Way less racist.
I read that about Lovecraft, but no, I'm going with Arkham Asylum. Maybe that's because I spent so much time putting together the Lego version with my son back in the day, but definitely Arkham Asylum.
Definitely. So Elliot is still back in undercover, basically, and he's gotten another readout from the aliens. They called back and he's like, is this place safe? Because my buddy Lenny I was telling you about was in one of the same. And he's like, shut up about Lenny, all right? And he's like, but listen, man, Lenny was taken. If you're not careful, the same thing's gonna happen to you.
Yeah,
he's like, what?
passing notes like little girls. I was like,
yeah, you found them. That means they found you.
It was like grade A conspiracy theorist. Just well done.
Yeah. And, you know, just then Bryden comes back in and says the federal agents are back. So, you know, Canik's like, stall them and you get back to work. So they, you know, then it flips back to Leverage headquarters. And I just love when they talk about the names of cons. Like, it's one of my favorite things. So they're talking about the Arkham Ascent. He's like, it's really just the haunted house without the chains. And you're like, what? What does that mean?
Now I want to know about the haunted house.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's where you make someone think their house is haunted, but you don't need to use clanking chains because you're using aliens. So then she's on the phone talking to Mr. Canik and like, oh yeah, I'll be right there right away. And so she's headed over there to be Dr. Pearl O'Neill. So, and Nate's like, all right, now it's time to tighten the buckles on our straitjacket. He's terrifying. He's so terrifying. And this is so great. When Parker and Hardison come in, one, they make a Men in Black reference.
Yes.
You know, the difference between us and them, we make these look good.
These look good.
And Canik is talking to them and telling them no warrant, no entry. And they pull out a piece of paper right as Sophie comes up and distracts him. So he doesn't even look at this piece of paper. He's like, oh, you got a warrant. All right, fine. But he's distracted by Sophie and then leaves with her. And Hardison opens up the piece of paper and it just says candlelight picnic under the stars.
And Parker's like, oh, I do like fire.
He's like, you see, you listen, but you don't hear. And I just love that he used this prop for their con as like a romantic gesture. Like, oh, you're so freaking cute. Can't with you. So upstairs, Canik and Sophie meet up with Elliot and she puts on the headphones and he's like, all right, you got to work together and work fast and I'll make it worth your while. And so he leaves them and she's like in character, like,
oh yes.
Even though her back is to him, she's like, doesn't break. So good. And Bryden is trying to keep Canik on track. He's like, Braddock Aeronautics is right. So close. Like, we can taste this. And you're just going to bring federal agents and crazy nutcases into your house. Like, we're going to crash this deal. Like, we can't have this get out. And he's like, you got to shut up about this deal. Because those new nutcases are about to hand me the biggest discovery in human history. And you can't even see it.
It's bigger than the... No, that's later. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Because of that. And they're like still, you know, making notes and like printing out things. And, you know, he says, Einstein, Darwin, they're going to be the footnotes. They're going to name cities after me.
Sure, dude.
Okay.
Sure. He's got a douche canoe. He's like a douche cruiser. I mean,
right? Douche yacht over here. Ocean liner. And then like, 2 seconds later, Sophie's tapping on the glass because she's figured it out. That's how easy.
Hilarious. Side note, one of the books that I'm reading right now is Code Girls, which is about the crypto analysts who worked during World War II.
Yeah. So
I'm watching Sophie do this, having read this book, and I'm like, no way. No way on God's green earth is anybody breaking these codes this quickly. No. I know it's a TV show, but.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So, but she says they use the Pi sequence to decode the message. And this time they figured out that all of the numbers represent different characters in the Mayan alphabet. Mm-hmm. And Elliot's like, she gets it, man. She really gets it.
And then she
translates it.
He who comprehends our words is worthy of our presence.
And she's like, oh, if I just had a bit more time, I could get more. And he's like, no, you've done enough. I'm going to double your last payment. And then like escorts Sophie out of the room. And
I wrote the numbers on the board.
I'm the one to put the numbers up. Yeah. And he's like, hey, burn that on a CD. Burn it on a CD.
Okay.
So Kanick's like, all right, we're doing a press conference. Get me all of these major publications. And tomorrow morning, we're going to announce this. And Brian's like, but that's when the aeronautics people are going to be here. Like, you've double booked yourself, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, they can wait. All right, this is way bigger. And he says, call Riley. The professor doesn't leave. I want everyone on ice until I make the announcement. And then we see someone grab Sophie, but then Nate punches the guard and knocks him out. Which is the second punch, Nate punch in two episodes too.
Elliot, you've got trouble headed your way. And of course, it's already his head against the glass because these people.
He's like, yeah, you think? But then, I love this. He's like, okay, listen, the only way the con will work is if there are no signs of struggle.
So don't break anything.
You can't break anything.
In this and very like, delicate computer room.
With like shelves full of knickknacks.
Yes.
Trophies and like little glass figurines and stuff. And it's this great fight, which John Rogers gave a lot of credit to like working with Jackie Chan when he worked on Jackie Chan's show. Because he said the funniest and the best fights are the most interesting ones were the ones where you were trying to get out of a room. Like you had like an obstacle, like,
You know,
I can't do these things. And so you have to be really inventive with what you are doing. Cause there's a lot of stuff where he's like hitting things and then he like puts a trophy back on the shelf.
Dives to catch a trophy that's falling and
It's so good. And he gets up and he's bleeding a little bit and Parker comes in with her next E.T. reference and she's like, ouch. All right, listeners, you can't see, but Sally and I just like reached out towards each other on the screen. And he's like, would you stop that? Like, because he's underneath people. Like, there's a man unconscious lying on top of him.
And he's like, help me out. Yeah.
So he's like, all right, pick the guys up and put them in the bin. And so they start picking these guys up, and he looks at their shoes and he's like, wait, hey. I've got an idea. It's a great idea. It's so good.
It's a beautiful idea.
Awesome. Because Kant comes back and he is looking around and there's no one around except for empty shoes.
Just empty shoes.
Didn't remember to retie the shoes though. But he's already too stressed, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
And
in times.
Right. But he finds the CD that Elliot burned and he grabs it and he's running around this empty building looking for people and he just keeps finding the shoes. And so someone was like, how many people did Elliot beat up and take their shoes from them? And John Rogers is like, enough.
Yeah, as many as he wanted to. Where have y'all been?
Yeah, so eventually he gets to the front door and Elliot appears and falls through them and he's like bleeding and they fall to the ground and he's like, what happened? And he's like, it's not what, man, it's who. It's not who.
Hey, man.
Who did this to you? And he's like, it's not who, man, it's what. And he's like, they ripped me out of my car. They opened me up. Aliens? They want the one. Them signals. It wasn't a hello. It was a test. It was a test. It was, they want the best of the best, man. I told them it was you.
They were hurting me, man.
I'm sorry. And then he passes out or dies.
Dies. He's thinking.
Right? Yeah. That's what I thought too. And in the blog, someone was like, what would have happened if Kanick was in his right mind and had like tested his pulse. And John Rogers is like, Elliot can stop his heart for 30 seconds.
We got some folks that need to work on their willing suspension of disbelief.
Right? Like, why are you asking these questions on the blog? Like, come on.
This isn't a documentary on PBS, y'all. Yes.
He would have been like, oh, I was just passed out. Like, so, you know, Kanick's like, Riker, come on. And then he just like leaves him there and runs back into the listening station area and like turns off all the lights. So we only see the security cameras And then this like bright light starts shining in from outside the room and he's like panicking and he's running around. And then Elliot gets up. He's like, that sucked. And so they're watching him through the monitors and gets Kanik, we haven't mentioned this before, but he has this like affectation where he uses a golf putter as like a cane and a pointer.
Yes.
And he like runs into his office and he picks it up and Hardis is like, oh, come on. These dudes traveled 10,000 light years to get here. You're going to scare them off with a putter. And they're like, okay, Sophie, you're up. And he's also like, as he's running, he's hearing these like creepy clicky alien noises as well.
And which, like, they're flickering and.
Yeah. I don't know. In his office, well, Sophie's annoyed. She's like, I really hate you. I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And then Nate's like, don't worry, it's perfectly safe-ish. And in Kanik's office, like the lights, like you said, and the monitors and the phones are all going off. They're going crazy. And he's like trying to answer his phone. He's like, hello. And Parker starts playing this like high-pitched ringing sound. And you see that Hardison and Parker have like speakers outside of his window.
And they put and like foaming stuff in the coffee maker.
The Keurig is going crazy. And they're like cans flying out of the mini fridge. And then you see like them setting all this stuff up when they were in with their warrant. It's so good. And then Kanik looks up and Sophie's like pounding on the window with like this light just shining from behind her. And she's like, help me, please let me in. And then like the light gets more intense and then she's like ripped backward. Just, like,
back into a vortex.
A vortex. It looks so cool.
It does. And it's even better because then they go to her later on the ground. She's like, that is the last time I lie about playing Peter Pan on Broadway.
I love that that implies that Nate was like, well, I looked at your resume. And it says you can do these stunts.
Nobody on the leverage team would have ever fudged their resume or anything. I mean,
never. Yeah. Oh, no. Especially not the grifter. And Hardison says, all right, I programmed the electronics and the lighting to go haywire intermittently for the rest of the night. So basically he's just like, we can leave. We can go home.
She's like, what happens we'll be back in the morning? He's like, would you?
Yeah. And Barker's like, hey, this gives me a good idea. He's like, whatever it is, no.
No.
So cute. Oh, and Elliot's still in character. He's like, oh man, he flipped like a coin. I wish Lenny could have seen it. And then he kind of gets a little abashed. He's like, Hardison gave me the alias, and then Sophie helped me build the character. And he walks off. And Sophie's like, oh, we just gave him layers. And
what? Then she says, why does Kubrick make directing look so hard?
It's not that hard. Which is going to come back later. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So the next morning, Kanik is still crouched under his desk having this like out-of-body experience. And Bryden comes in. He's like, what are you doing in here? And he's like, don't let them get me. So he takes this man who is full on having a mental breakdown and is like, it's going to be okay. And he's like, you need rest. Like, I'm going to tell the press to go home and come back tomorrow.
No.
The press are here. Like, let's go. I got to tell them. I got to be the one. Because he's this still.
This is the point where he's like, this is a discovery greater than the wheel.
You think they're trying to kill you. Come on. It's amazing. So he goes in and he's like, I, James Kanik, have made first contact. And he like tries to tell them all this stuff. But then Elliot walks into the room.
He's like, you're dead.
Yeah. And he's like, I saw you die. You went up in their ship. You said they probed you. And then Elliot's like, what? I don't know what you're talking about, man. And then like he hears the noise from the night before and he's like, do you hear that? That's them. And he's like turning around And then you see his little thing on his device. So many people were like, that device is so big. So many people would have seen that. And John Roger's just like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, I messed up. Like, it should have been smaller. I'm like, no. Like, who cares? Like, let it go.
Yeah.
This is a show. This is a fictional show.
And then Sophie walks in.
Then Sophie walks in and he is very much like, what? They took you up. Like,
they took you in their ship or whatever.
Yeah. And although, yeah, the press are like, okay, this guy is out of his mind. We're going to leave. And he's freaking out because he hears the sound. He's like, why are you after me? I didn't do anything. I didn't decide for the message. You don't want me. You want, he did it. And she did it right there. Don't probe me. And the press is like, okay, we're out of here. And I did like this point somebody brought up in the blog. They were like, why would the press leave? Like, that's a great story. This millionaire is going batshit on live.
They wouldn't have left. They would have been, unless they were going to get their camera crew so they could
And he said, okay, the people leaving are like the mainstream people, but everyone who's sitting are like the online media, including the man who is dressed like the doctor.
Exactly.
Who's man dressed as the 11th doctor sitting there, which everyone's like, where's the Doctor Who reference? Where's the Doctor Who reference?
There it is.
He's like, those are all the online things. So just assume that he's on the front page of Gawker. Don't worry. I was like, okay, cool. Thank you. Because the Braddock Aeronautics people are there as well, and they start to leave.
They're watching him come unhinged.
Yeah, and like, so Nate's like, oh, hey, you don't know me, but do you remember Orrin Metz, the actual inventor of the hybrid jet engine?
It was very Barney. Have you met Orrin Metz?
And they're like, oh, you have sketches? Let's go. Like,
wow, you have these sketches in what looks like a composition notebook used by high schoolers. You must be legit.
Yeah, let's go. But again, I mean, you're obviously more
sane than that guy.
Yeah, we can work with you.
I need to suspend my disbelief too, because when one of the greatest things to happen happens next, which is the Chase Mix comes back.
Yes, because the CD that he has grabbed, Hardison says, okay, Elliot, there are two files encrypted in this message. Play the first one for Canik, and it's the Mayan code, but the second one, burn the second one to the CD. It's a masterpiece. And then it comes on. And he's like, what? No, come on. Come on.
I just got that song out of my head.
And and so he's like, well, it's catchy. And then Canik also sees Nate through the window. And it's, you know, this lovely parallel to the first shot where Metz is like on the other side banging on the glass and he's on the inside now banging on the glass. Implying he's going to be taken away and locked away. Fingers crossed.
I don't know, whatever that song is. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. Have you even heard that one? There we go.
Yes.
I was like, I started this song and people are going to think you're crazy.
Oh, okay. So back at the brew pub, Oren's back and, you know, he's like, you cleared my name. Like, Braddock Aeronautics offered me this research position to continue to develop my engine. And he's like, that's fantastic. And he says, you know, he thanks him, but he's like, I should be thanking you for reminding me to listen. I appreciate it. And they shake hands. And Sophie asks, like, why didn't you tell him that you created a research grant in his name? And Nate says, well, it's because he doesn't care about that. Like, he cares about the work and not the recognition. I just didn't read him right from the start. And Sophie's like, I knew you'd get there eventually. And then he says, well, what happens when eventually comes too late? You're like, oh, what?
Like, wait, what? Are we foreshadowing? Huh? I don't like it.
But then it's pouring rain outside of Leverage headquarters and Parker comes in with a basket, a picnic basket and flowers. And she's really bummed. he's like, oh, well, A Picnic Under the Stars, you listen. And she's like, but everything's ruined with the stupid rain, which it actually was raining.
Oh.
And so they had to change the scene.
Aw.
Which I've been like, oh, that's so inventive. I know.
Like, close your eyes. And then Hardison creates stars.
With Marvin. And he says, nothing is ruined. And then she opens them. And then she does the last E.T. reference and she says, I'll be right here on his heart. And then she like puts her head on his chest and it's just too much. It's just too much. It's too sweet. I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts on this episode?
I don't think so. I do find it interesting that there were, I didn't catch any Star Wars references, but.
Ooh, yeah.
I suppose if we got Star Trek in the house, we can't.
Oh yeah. You don't want to cross contaminate.
To bring in Ghostbusters again.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder also, since I think at this point, Star Wars was owned by Disney.
Oh, never mind then.
You can't mention things. You can't make references. Yeah. I don't think they got that Disney money. yeah. Okay. Do you want to talk heist lights?
I don't have a heist light. Okay. I'm gonna go ahead and admit that.
Lately, I haven't been doing them very often because we've just been talking about any news that we know about.
Other than the one we discussed before we started, which.
Yes, I'm about to bring that.
I do. So I'm just going to leave that to you.
Okay. Well, I don't know too much about it because it really just broke a couple hours before I left work. But the New York Times just posted a helicopter crew in Utah who were surveying. For Utah's wildlife agency, they're surveying bighorn sheep, found this strange 10 to 12 foot metallic object in this like rocky area in Utah. And it's just, it's not a cylinder. It's like a big rectangular prism and it's silvery metal.
I swear we're already living in a dystopian world with this pandemic, but then that metal monolith, and I'm like, well, shit, now we're in an alien invasion movie. I see how
exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
It's day all over again.
I know. I was like, you know, and then I saw it and I was like, it is so perfect that we're talking about this episode tonight. So it's most likely they've decided that it's an art installation done by someone. Sure. Which, because this is government land, is illegal. Like, you can't just install a piece of art with no permission.
That's why I'm saying sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, you know, the part of me that like grew up watching the X-Files is like, it's not mm-hmm. art.
No.
But then the part of me that like almost pursued an art degree was like, yeah, definitely this could be art. Like.
That's true. Now there was
this somebody would do this.
There's this funky thing at the University of Tennessee. I don't know if it's still there, but it was like an obelisk, and then there were like mannequin legs, and the mannequin legs were hanging over the moon. And I walked by it frequently, and I have yet to figure out what exactly it meant.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm gonna look into that. I love weird art, and I love to like think about things. With two meanings at the same time. So I'm like, I fully love listening to an artist like reasoning of like, this is what this means. This is why I did this. This is the symbolism. I love like thinking that it does mean this, but also that it's complete and utter bullshit that they just made up because they wanted to do something weird. Yes. And I think both of those things can be true at the same time and occupy the same space. And I adore art for that reason. That it can both be.
I can look that up and send it to you because.
Yes, I want to see it. Because it can be full of meaning and meaningless at the same time. And I think that's wonderful. It's what it means to you. And to most people, it doesn't mean anything.
Things would just pop up on campus. Like at one point, there was this huge metal canopy bed.
Okay.
It was a canopy bed, only it was metal. what, where did it
and, come from? And like you as a student walking by didn't know, or nobody knew?
I mean, they called the art and architecture building the Love Boat. So weird stuff just tended to pop up. So we were all just like, oh, somebody's art's out again in front of Strong.
Yeah.
But it was weird because it just showed up. You're just like, huh, there's a big metal bed out there.
Right, like you never saw anybody install it. It's just like the night.
And I lived in Strong Hall, and my bedroom faced that yard. So.
Whoa. Whoa, Sally. That's scary.
Aliens.
It might be the aliens.
Yes.
I gotta fucking love aliens. Okay. let's see. Any leverage news? Christian Kane posted another picture with LeVar Burton getting dinner together. Because I think LeVar Burton is also directing an episode or two of NCIS New Orleans, or is one of those procedural shows set in New Orleans, which is cool. It was Gina Bellman's daughter's birthday.
Nice.
And Gina Bellman's also really pushing the new Shakespeare for Every Day of the Year book that just came out. I think it was just published, I think yesterday was its pub day, which is a really neat book.
Oh, I need to check that out.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. I really don't think we know too much else. Beth Reese Graff has been posting some more pictures of just kind of like behind the scenes, but like not spoilery at all, like just her with a mask on, like her reflection in the camera or something, which is sweet. I love that she's giving us the most little teasers. I'm like, Aldous, please, Christian, please. Noah Wiley, show me something. I don't think I actually follow Noah Wiley, so it's not his fault to don't see things.
God, he's got all the dirt and you're just like, I don't
know. I'm just missing it. Yeah. Okay. So the book is called Shakespeare for Every Day of the Year, compiled by Ali Aziri or Ezri. Came out yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. Helena Bonham Carter is doing a lot of stuff for it as well.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that's about it. I don't think I'm missing anything else. One very tangential to leverage, only because this is the person who inspired me to start this podcast. I always put their name in the show notes, but Rebecca Mock is an artist who does like graphic novels and other really beautiful art, and I love them a lot. And they way back in the day, like tweeted something about, if I ever did a podcast, it'd be about found families on leverage. And I was like, I want to make a podcast about leverage. Then I waited a year and they did not make one. So I was like, I guess it's cool for me to do it.
Okay.
But they just posted that they had a piece that they made for the makers themed issue of the Airbnb magazine. Didn't know that was a thing. And it got selected for a silver medal from the Society of Illustrators, which is a very old society that was founded in 1901. So the oldest nonprofit organization dedicated to the art of illustration in the US. It's a really beautiful piece. I will put it in the show notes. Just one shout out, because without Rebecca Mock, we would not be here today. Sally, we probably wouldn't really be friends.
No.
We would follow each other because of Deanna, but.
Yes, but we wouldn't be friends. I wouldn't be distracted by your cat over your shoulder.
I know. Sally, where can people find you online?
You can find me at sallykilpatrick.com, although that's currently somewhat under construction. You can always find me on Twitter at superwritermom. Apparently, I can no longer talk after 10. don't feed gremlins after midnight. I can't talk after. Anyway. Super Writer Mom, where I am procrastinating instead of doing my NaNoWriMo work.
I didn't even start one this year, so good on you. And you can always find me on Twitter as well at LibrarianSteve. You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks to talk about the French Connection job. And Robin's coming back for that one, and she has literally been chomping at the bit for three seasons to talk about this episode. I'm very excited because we're going to make some food.
Oh,
well, not really, but Elliot's going to make some food and we're going to watch him.
That's even better, really.
All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. Watching? No, this is a podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I enjoyed watching. I don't know about you.
There you go. Well, that's all that matters, right? We're definitely going to miss some stuff. But also, when I was looking at the blog today, I was thinking, you know, I think that's the beauty of the show is that we could finish this whole podcast series and then go back and start over and talk about things that we missed.
Yeah.
Which I think is what's awesome. There's layers and you're never going to catch everything. And there's always like, I'll hit post on the podcast and I'll be like, oh my God, I forgot to talk about that thing that I thought was so cool. Or that moment that we didn't even talk about that actual scene. So, but I'm like, but the episode was 2 hours long. So maybe it was good that we stopped.